Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by former Giants punter Jeff Fiegels, I am John Schmelk. The number for you is 201-939-4513. We'll be with you for a couple of minutes, then we'll be joined by Charles Davis of Fox Sports and the NFL Network to talk about the Giants draft class. And Jeff, we haven't talked to you since the Giants made their first-round selection, Evan Engram, so give me your take real quick before we get Charles on in a couple minutes about the rest of the Giants draft rounds 2 through 6.
Well, I like him. I think that, you know, I think a lot of guys would have liked to get up and get Howard and all that kind of business, but the bottom line is he's a Giant, and I think that he fits very well into this offense. I think that the Giants were going after a gentleman like him that you can fit where, you know, in this type of offense. I see him as you can be a slot player, he can be a motion tight end, he can play down, he'll put his hand in the dirt. We know that he's not a traditional tight end, a blocking tight end. Nobody is really anymore in the NFL. But I think that he fits well into this Giants offense. He's fast. He's big. And I feel that it's just another weapon that another team is going to have to figure out from a matchup perspective of who they're going to cover with the other three guys that are on the field. So I know that just reading about him and kind of getting some information from other people about his character, he's a smart guy. He's always on time, doesn't miss classes. I think those are all great characteristics that Giants look for in a player, and they got one in the first round.
All right, how about Dalvin Tomlinson?
I think he'll fit in very perfectly. You know, the Giants were looking for a replacement for Hankins, and I think they went out and got a guy that played at one of the best college football programs in the country, and he certainly has played in some big games. I think he fills a need there from a depth perspective, and I think he's game ready. I think he's NFL caliber defensive tackle that can come in and get you some, you know, first and second down plays, and, you know, he gets pressure on the quarterback, and I think he's a smart guy, very good in technique-wise, very disciplined in what he does in that two technique that he'll play, and I think that he'll do well for the Giants defense.
All right, and let's go to round three. They went with the developmental quarterback. We talked about that more of a day three idea heading into the draft, but they went for him at the end of day two. Davis, yeah. What about a Cal?
Well, this is kind of a head-scratcher for a lot of people, but, you know, listen, I think that the Giants go with the philosophy that whoever the best player on the board is, and they felt that that was him. Now he can come in here and he can learn. Not only can he learn from Eli Manning, but he can also learn from Geno Smith, a guy that's played in the NFL and is on his second go-around with the team, but is hungry to compete, and I think that that's really what he'll do. He'll come in here and try to compete for that second spot.
And then finally, their day three picks, Wayne Gallman, Adam Bisnawadi, and Avery Moss.
Bisnawadi. We're going to have to get used to that
name, right? It's Bisnawadi, by the way. The W sounds like a V.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Very German.
Very German.
Yes.
Well, listen, I think that the running back in Gallman, is that it?
Yeah, from Clemson.
Well, we saw a lot him on TV playing. I think that, you know, he's a guy that is a little bit like Paul Perkins. I think that one thing, doing a little bit of study on him, is I like the way he plays around the red zone. I think he has an attitude of wanting to get into the end zone.
And he did an awful lot the last couple of years, too. I give you the number. Over the last 2 years, Gallman scored 30 touchdowns on the ground, 31 total.
Well, listen, the Giants need some red zone production,
yep,
both from the passing game, and they've gotten that with their first-round draft pick and Brandon Marshall. They're going to get it out of the running back position now, and this is a guy that he has a little knack for the goal line, and that's going to bode well for that offense.
All right, now let's get to our guest. If you want to listen and watch our interview with Charles Davis and you're on Twitter, head to Giants.com, the Giants mobile app. You can watch the interview and the show in its entirety there. And now we're joined by Charles Davis from Fox and from the NFL Network. Charles, you got John Schmelk and Jeff Fiegels up
Charles.
Here in the Giants facility in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Good afternoon. How you doing, man?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How's it going? Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Wonderful. I'm doing wonderful. We are we brought our canoes with us today because here in New Jersey it is absolutely pouring out. We're trying to wait for some spring weather, but sooner or later. But, you know, the draft has come around, so we know that summer is getting close, and we're excited to be here with you today, and thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. If you start to see them lining up two by two, give me a call, okay?
Yeah, right.
No problem at all. And Charles, to me, I love having guys like you talk about the draft because you're not only familiar with all the college players, you study the NFL teams as well. So you have a good idea of how these players might fit into the system they're being put into. And I think there's no better example of that than Evan Engram, a guy who I think could maybe play that JerMichael Finley role that he had with the Packers back in 2011, 2012. How do you see the Giants utilizing Engram in their offense, and do you think it's a good fit?
No, I think it's a fantastic fit. This is a kid that epitomizes what we're getting out of college and tight ends nowadays. Mm-hmm. Where we're talking about the old rocked-up wide receivers who are built a lot like wide receivers, but bigger than that. Not quite old school tight end size. You know, I mean, he's not. No one's going to mistake him for Mark Bavaro. Okay, I mean, that's not going to be that type of an issue at all. But his ability to run any route that you want in the route tree, his ability to not just run in the seams and take up the middle of the field, but you guys go back to the Super Bowl of Seattle, New England, and you remember probably right before the end of the first half, New England's got the ball out near midfield. They run a formation where they put all the receivers left and bring Gronk back to the nub side or the back side of the formation.
Yep.
Where he ends up in a one-on-one. And Seattle, in their adjustment, sent K.J. Wright, a Pro Bowl linebacker with great size, great length, which is a good matchup for Gronk in a confined area, but not in the open field because now you've turned him from an outside linebacker into a corner. And K.J. Wright, as great a player as he is not a corner. And you remember Gronk beat him on a go route, go fade, and Brady, I think, audibled into it, hits him with the touchdown right before the half. And that was a big, big play. Ingram can do all of those things for you, in my humble opinion. And I think that that's where, when you put, you know, couple him with the rest of the great receivers that the Giants have, you know, Sterling Shepard last year was drafted eventually to replace Victor Cruz and did it in fine style. And now you've got a bigger, taller target where you can run wide receiver routes with and also, of course, run your tight end stuff with him as well. And look, last year the Giants, in my humble opinion, they were jerry-rigging the tight end position most of the year anyway. this guy gives you a legit guy down the middle.
Yeah, and Charles, I want to kind of build on this a little bit because they signed Brandon Marshall this offseason. It's only a two-year deal, though. So the way I see it, if you want down the line, Ingram could almost be your replacement for Marshall if you want to go primarily from 11 formation personnel team to a 12 personnel team in a couple of years when Marshall's gone, and then you have Ingram and, say, another blocking tight end or another multifaceted tight end, and you can kind of adjust your play style that way as well in a couple of years.
I think I agree with that observation. You can definitely do that. Here's the other thing. I heard you talking with, I believe, a caller before about Wayne Gallman and his ability to score touchdowns and is a big threat in the red zone. Think about Evan Ingram in the red zone because he's not just a tall target that you're going to throw the jump balls to. He's going to beat people across their face on the slant and the inside routes. So you can't just jump up there and say, okay, I'm playing him for the fade, and let's see what happens, and can we beat him on a jump ball. Go ahead and put one of those tall guys out there, and Ingram gives him a little head shake, comes inside, bam, another. You got other options with him. So I think you get a little bit of everything out of Evan Ingram.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about the Giants' third-round draft pick and Davis Webb, and with you know, Eli Manning being here, and obviously he doesn't miss football games. He's you know, he's kind of on the back nine, as Jerry Reese has said. Give me a little your take on Davis Webb and what he can bring to this team. Is he going to, obviously we know he's going to come in and learn under one of the best quarterbacks that's ever played in this organization. So give me a little bit on Davis Webb and what you see in him.
Well, number one, when we talk about guys coming in learning under quarterbacks, Jeff, you've been around the game long enough, and I'm going to make a statement. I need you to tell me whether I'm on target or I'm out to lunch, okay?
Okay, sure.
The quarterback that's in power, we can write all the stories we want to about, oh, he took the kid under his wing, and he was the grandpappy to him and the whole deal. For the most part, I think the guys are affable. I think that they are professional. But they're not spending a whole lot of extra time.
No.
What the young quarterback has to do is learn by observation. Watch what he does. Check out his study habits, what he's doing in the weight room, how he's taking care of himself, how he processes information, what his reads are, the whole deal. Because that guy still wants to play.
Sure.
And it's a beautiful, lovely story to talk about. Come here, kid. Let me show you and give you the benefits of my wisdom.
Yeah.
And that's somewhat far-fetched for the most part. Now, are they throwing hands at each other? No. But at the same time, it's like, look, kid, I learned, you're going to have to learn. And now I'll help you, but I'm also not going to spend all night here getting you ready. I got to get myself ready as well. So for Davis Webb, that's what he'll have to do. Just observe Eli. Watch him. See what he does. See how he handles himself. Learn how to be a professional without being a pest. And those that do that tend to get more back from the veteran guy. Now, this Webb kid, I've seen him since he was a freshman in college, guys. I actually did a game of his when he was a true freshman at Texas Tech, and he was a starting quarterback at Oklahoma, and Texas Tech was undefeated that year, and they played Oklahoma off their feet. Heck of a game. Lightning delay, they end up losing the game. But I'll never forget him coming down the ramp in pregame without his helmet on, and he looked every bit of 17. I mean, it was, I will never get that look out of my eyes because he was a young kid. But remember this background. Son of a coach, has absorbed the game since the time he was born. In fact, used to use the Madden game to design plays that he would take to his father, the coach, and say, I want to run this type of stuff. So the kid has the mind for it, as well as, obviously, the athletic ability. Now, he can sling it. There's no doubt about it. He can sling it. And he's played in two systems that throw it around like crazy. So he'll have to learn some pro stuff, have to learn some footwork. But the base is there. And I think that the Giants may not have even been thinking about him. But when he presented in the third round, I think they had to jump on him.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with your assessment on, you know, the quarterback situation and those guys coming in the room. And really, when I think about when we talk about a quarterback coming in and playing behind a guy, that's my observation. It's not that the quarterback that's above him is going to give him the time of day. He's just going to give him his time to watch and learn from him. And I feel that there's no better person than Eli Manning because, you know, the Peyton brothers, they are students of the game. They study like nobody else, and they're going to be able to take a lot of and absorb a lot of that stuff that comes through with it. And I believe that the Giants, you're spot on. I think that they, when they saw Webb there, they said, you know, listen, we got to take this kid. We don't know what's going to be down the road next year or the next or the following year. We're going to take a chance and take a chance. We've got a good player here, a young kid. And listen, that's today's world. All these kids are playing those video games, and they're all learning from Matt. You know? I mean, what did we have? Tecmo Bowl back when I was playing. So I don't know if I learned anything from that other than I could kick a 16-second punt on Tecmo Bowl. That was pretty cool.
And not only that, as long as you played with Bo Jackson, you scored on every play.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I mean, if you had Tecmo Bowl. So, look, I work on the Madden video game now, and I'm fortunate enough to do that as one of the voices. The first time I got street cred in my life from my 18-year-old son was when I told him I was working on Madden. First time.
You know, Charles, it's funny. I think we would all agree if Davis Webb, with his size, his ability to throw the ball, if he had put up that level of production but in a more pro-style system in college, he would have probably been the top overall pick in the draft. So now the trick is, can he take that production from that air raid offense and bring it into the NFL? You mentioned watching Eli Manning. What do you think are the top two or three most important things he can absorb from watching Eli to help him make that transition from his college system to what the West Coast offense is going to ask from him here with the Giants?
Well, number one is learning how to be a professional. Because coming from being a kid in college to all of a sudden having to punch the clock every day, he can be a pro by being on time, but you can't be a quarterback unless you're way ahead of time. Okay, so if the meeting's at 9 and he wants to just be a pro, he'll walk in at 8:55. But if he wants to be a quarterback, he'll be in the facility a heck of a lot earlier. Because people need to see that out of their QBs. They need to see that they're the guys. And he needs to find out, hey, Eli, do you come in early and watch tape? Mind if I watch with you and observe how you do it and maybe ask a few questions and not be a pain in the behind and maybe learn a few things? Because watching tape, we always talk about, well, go watch the tape. Very few guys know how to actually watch tape. Okay, watching tape for them is like watching a TV show. Okay, absorb it. Okay, what'd you get out of it? I really can't tell you. You've got to know what you're looking for. Know how to learn how to spot those coverages. Learn the tips, the tails, the tells that people are going to give you in certain defenses. And as you know, they're way more exotic on this level than they are in college. So you've got to get all of that down. And then, of course, the basics, taking a snap from center, being balanced, getting away from the center, being able to run everything in your system so everything looks uniform and the same, that you don't tip off what you're going to run because you're trying to get a half a step ahead because you haven't done it and grooved it before. So it's all of those things coming together. And once he's able to do that with that full confidence, then the natural arm, athletic ability, and everything else takes over. But you know how it is in the beginning. Jeff could tell us a million tales about watching guys. We can literally see the wheels spinning in their head as they're trying to maneuver. And then seeing them about 4 or 5 weeks later, and you see it becoming more and more comfortable for them. And that's what it's going to be like for Davis Webb. But to me, learning how to be a pro, first and foremost, being that guy. Look, the kid in Philadelphia, Carson Wentz, he had a great mentor there, but he listened to him, all right? He had the mentor, the kid out of Missouri, Case Daniel. And they were meeting in the mornings at 5 a.m.
Wow.
Carson had to bring the donuts and the coffee because he was the rookie.
Yep.
But Case said, hey, listen, if we're going to meet at 5, and he tested the kid, and the kid was there every single time, he's more and more willing to give of himself and to help the kid along. If you're like that, people will help you.
Charles, last one from me on Davis Webb real quick. You know, in that air raid offense, a lot of time where you're going to throw the ball is determined pre-snap. In the pros,
right,
that's like 10% of the job. You take the snap, then you have to see where everybody moves and to see how people are trying to fool you. Can Webb figure that out with practice reps, or is that something that you can only get in preseason reps and really live action where he can try to make that transition from what he did in college to what he's going to have to do here, seeing what the defense does, processing it, and then making a good decision?
Oh, you can do a good portion of it in practice reps.
Okay.
You can do another good portion of it in your film cut-ups and on the board when your coach says if he moves here, he moves here, he moves here. That's all wonderful. But then we go to game speed, right?
We
go to practice speed, we go to game speed. And you can't really groove it until you're doing it at those full speed times. All right? I mean, look, it's not trite and it's not a cliche unless it happens over and over and over, right? But have we ever heard from anyone anything other than, hey, you've really improved in your game. What's the big difference? Game slowed down for me.
Yep.
Why is it slowed down? Because I've seen it a few times. I understand more of what's going on. So I don't have to rush myself. I go at a normal pace, and it seems like a normal speed. When you first start off, it's warp speed. And that's what he'll go through like any other rookie.
And he'll get a sense of that just from practicing. He'll get a sense that he's going to play in the preseason games. The fact is that, you know, he's got a good situation for him. And, you know, and we're talking about our draft picks. So we've talked about Evan Engram. We've talked about Davis Webb. And then sandwiched in there in the middle is our second-round draft pick is Dalvin Tomlinson. You know, certainly another need player for the Giants. But when we're talking about a sexy pick, I never see a defensive tackle as a sexy pick, in my opinion. But I also see this guy coming from Alabama, which doesn't need to tell you more about, you know, a player like this taken in the second round. I like him. I think he's a perfect, perfect pick for the Giants in a depth need because we lost Hankins. And now talk a little bit about Dalvin and what he can bring to this defense, which last year, really, when you talk about the New York Giants in 2016, it was all about the defense.
Yeah, and, you know, what Damon Harrison did for you last year, you saw the effects of that. Here's the deal with Tomlinson, in my estimation. He's a guy who will play square to the line of scrimmage. He's going to be hard to turn and move out of the hole, okay? But, you know, he's used to dealing with doubles, even though they had, obviously, Jonathan Allen there. Okay, and before that, it was A'shaun Robinson and Jaron Reed. You know, it's Alabama. They're going to put out a factory of players.
Mm-hmm.
What people may not know is that Dalvin Tomlinson was a starter early in his career ahead of Jonathan Allen, who was much more highly touted coming out this year. Tomlinson had an injury. Allen jumped in, and you know how that goes. But Tomlinson worked his way back. Heavy-handed guy. Handles things in front of him. I think he's got a little bit of pass rush ability to collapse the pocket inside, which is what you want to get in the face of the quarterback. And you want to have some fun, turn on the Clemson tape, the championship game this year, and study the first half. Dalvin Tomlinson was the best player on defense for Alabama in the first half of that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, Clemson was putting, you know, more people towards Allen and, you know, obviously worried about Tim Williams off the edge and Ryan Anderson on the other side. But Tomlinson was wreaking havoc inside. They were struggling to block him. He was making plays on the ball carriers. I like him. Always have, and I thought getting him in the second round was a really nice pick. And as you said, not sexy to most people, but if you ask all those big linemen, what do they always call themselves?
Big sexy. Exactly.
Absolutely right, Charles. I want to knock through the last three picks for you real quick. How do you think Wayne Gallman's going to work his way onto the field? Because
to me, he's
kind of, though, a do-everything guy, kind of like Paul Perkins is. How do you think they complement each other, and how do you think the Giants can use both to their greatest effectiveness?
I had Perkins in college, and the thing about Perkins was you could spend a whole game watching him and feel like he didn't do a whole lot, and then you look at the end of the game, he'd run for almost 150 yards.
Yeah.
All right, he was one of those guys, and every time I had him, he would make big plays in the fourth quarter. So he was that all-day sucker guy. All right? just keep handing it to him. Attrition, and by the end of the game, he would put up a big play, a big shot on them that would really put a sting on them. He's that type of a player. Gallman comes at you with force and fury right from the first snap. He reminds me of when Devontae Freeman was at Florida State. Jack of all trades, many scouts are wondering what he was the master of, and what they forgot was because he played so hard, he made things happen. Gallman's the same exact player as far as I'm concerned. Here's where Gallman lost steam. He lost steam in the offseason in testing. He's not a super tester. We found that out. He's not going to blow you away in the 40. He's not going to jump over buildings in a single bound. But turn on the tape and tell me he doesn't play hard, furious, takes every carry, will block people. Okay, he can catch the ball a little bit. I just love the way that he goes about it. And remember, Devontae Freeman was, what, a fourth-round pick?
Yep.
And he's gone back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, and now you see what you're getting out of him. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's exactly what you're getting out of Gallman, but I'm a much bigger fan of his playing than I worry about his testing. And I think he might have gotten drafted lower because of testing.
Well, we all know that the talk about the draft this year was how bad, if you will, that the offensive linemen were in this draft. I think that the Giants wanted to improve that position, but they just didn't feel like they were going to go up and get somebody. So the Giants went and grabbed Adam Bisnawati.
Bisnawati.
Yeah, so I think I like him. We actually did a little bit of study on some of the colleges with the kids coming out of college into the draft. Yeah. Pittsburgh was one of the teams that I studied. I looked at that offensive line for Pittsburgh. They only gave up 5 sacks on the year, but they ran the football exceptionally, and I think this Adam guy is running behind him. What do you think about him? I know he's a 6th-round draft pick, which is basically almost a borderline street free agent, but the fact of the matter is this guy, to me, seems to be a big, tough guy. He's a left tackle. I think he's a grinder, and I think he'll fit in well with that Giant offensive line.
So I like your scouting report on him, and I think what you're going to find with him is, remember that Pitt team that you're talking about, Bisnawati, left tackle, Deion Johnson playing guard next to him is another tough, hard-nosed kid. So they were able to maneuver the football that way, and kind of in the image of their head coach, Pat Narduzzi. Okay, Pat's a defensive coordinator by trade, and all he wants to do is hit people left and right. And that Pitt offense really reflected that with James Conner running behind them. Here's the thing about Bisnawati. He's tall. He's lengthy. He looks like a tackle. But I'll be honest with you. The best reps I saw him take were inside at guard. So he's almost a little bit of an anomaly. I think the Giants have him targeted to play tackle right away because that's what they're going to need. But I think he can help you inside as well if that comes out to be part of what they need. And don't forget, you're dressing 7 and playing 5, so guys who can play multiple positions are huge in order to grab a jersey and get on the roster each weekend. And Bisnawati, I think, fits that. And, of course, it wouldn't be the Giants if you didn't take a pass rusher at some point.
Yep.
And that's what Avery Moss is out of Youngstown State. Opposite end of Derek Rivers, who went earlier in the draft from Youngstown State. But Avery Moss, another good pass rusher. And you're the Giants. If there's a pass rusher on the board and you got a chance, you go get him.
Absolutely, Charles. Real quick, what did you think of the other 3 NFC East teams? I thought they all helped themselves and really filled some much-needed holes to make themselves better right away.
Dallas's draft, to me, seemed to be a fitting needs draft, and I thought they did a pretty decent job of that. And I know there was a debate about taking Taco Charlton versus T.J. Watt. Well, for what Dallas wants, which is a hand-in-the-dirt defensive end, Charlton is much more of that. Watt is a stand-up outside linebacker. That was probably their tiebreaker.
Yep.
But I think overall they fit that. They picked up some corners. Drew Pearson stirred up the crowd with Chidobe Awuzie's pick. But I think he's a heck of a player. Jordan Lewis, a good player. Philadelphia, I think, being able to go get Derek Barnett, another pass rusher for Schwartz, exactly what they needed. And Sidney Jones was a long play pick, not a short play, because of the Achilles tendon. But he doesn't blow the Achilles in his workout. Sidney Jones might have been the pick number 1 at 14 for the Philadelphia Eagles. So, again, I think that they helped themselves. And Washington, did they say Jonathan Allen fell to them and they took him? Yeah, they did. And I think that that's a big-time pickup for them. And then, of course, they got into the backfield and picked up a runner, which many people thought they wouldn't do. But to me, that's an indictment of Matt Jones. He fumbled the ball too much, and they're not sure they could count on him. And they wanted to give some competition to him. That Rob Kelly, and of course Chris Thompson. So I think all of them, as you noted, did help themselves. And let's face it, the NFC East, okay? Tape up your fists and let's start swinging, because that's what the East is every year.
Finally, Charles, by far my favorite part of the draft was your breakdown of the orangutan in the final on the last day. You were rolling. You had me rolling here at the facility. I'm not sure Jeff saw it. What the Colts did, they had monkeys at the zoo making their pick by hitting a screen, and there was just gigantic orangutan. Now, you thought he was going to work as a run-and-hit linebacker. To me, you put that orangutan at offensive tackle, no one's getting around him.
I think that you and I would be fighting over who would get him for our position.
Absolutely.
And you make perfect sense, because the same things I'm seeing in the orangutan with the heavy hand.
I did see it, by the way.
Look, they've got opposable thumbs. They can grab on, all right? So when he grabs onto you and then locks out with those arms.
He ain't letting go.
As a defender, I'll shed you. As you said, as an offensive tackle, you're not getting around him. So either way, all I'm telling you is, he can't scrimmage with your team, because you will get guys hurt, and you can't afford that. He's going to play on Sunday or Monday or whatever day our game is, but he's not scrimmaging. Okay? It's that simple. But I'm making him a run and chase guy. I'm going to stack him and let him go get people. I mean, I just don't see how they're going to be able to block him.
And Charles,
I saw all the Clint Eastwood movies with Clyde the monkey, Clyde the orangutan, and Clyde had heavy hands. And I think this one, Rocky is his name, will do the exact same thing. And my man Mike Mayock was like, why are we watching this chimp? And I was crying.
Yeah,
I was laughing so hard.
Yeah, you actually cracked Mayock. Mayock's impossible to crack. He's so locked in. You cracked him. You finally got him on day three. He lost it.
When I started breaking down Rocky, I think Mike was like, okay. He kind of threw in the towel at that point. And I was laughing so hard, I broke a sweat like Patrick Ewing, and they had to throw me a John Thompson towel.
That didn't take you long, then.
Oh, Charles, awesome stuff, man. Your coverage of the draft every year is fantastic. We enjoy watching you.
Yeah.
And thanks so much for carving out some time today. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you down the road, and enjoy your coverage of the NFL season as it kickoffs in a few months.
Thank you, Charles. Right? We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. You know I'm a New York native, and one of my high school coaches, man, by the name of Bill Freer, is as loyal a Giants fan as you can get. And the idea that you guys would have me on a show like this will fill his heart with pride that one of his boys was talking about his beloved
there
Giants.
There you go.
So
hey,
this is a big day for me. Thanks
Charles,
a lot, guys.
Charles, great stuff. And, of course, you work with Bob Papa. He and I share an office, so he always has nothing but great things to say about you as well, and he sends his regards.
Thank you.
You give Bob my best. Jeff, you take care of yourself as well.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you later.
Okay,
and
Charles.
Don't let them line up 2x2, guys.
Yeah, well, we already got one orangutan. Maybe we'll go find another one.
Thanks, Charles.
All right, we'll see you, Charles.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Later, man.
Oh,
Charles
great
Davis.
Insight.
He's the best.
Great insight.
Yeah, what a
does,
nice guy,
does
too.
Does a great
He's
job
awesome.
On TV. And like you said, he covers the NFL and the college, so what better guy to get on, you know, after the draft that can see both sides of it, you know? So
yeah,
it's very insightful.
And that's what we tried to do. Before the draft, we get all the guys on that really just do the college guys. We were trying to see,
sure,
you know, what type of players there are. And then we figure out if they fit with the Giants.
Exactly.
Once they're on the team, you get the guy that knows the college players and the NFL players. It's golden.
It's perfect. Yeah, and he does a nice job. And, man, those guys are so well in tune with everything that's going on. I don't know how they get all the names correct all the time, but he does an amazing job. I wonder if he started his mock draft for 2018.
Oh, I hope not. By the way, that literally, though, for you folks that didn't watch day three of the draft, if you're in front of a computer, leave our window open now. They open another window. Go to YouTube. Maybe pause BBK for a second. The talk about the monkeys at the Indianapolis Zoo. I mean, look.
I did see a clip of it. It was actually, I'm sure it was a lot more funny when they were talking about it on air.
Dude.
You know,
because at that point of the day, that must have been like, I don't know, 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Everyone's shot.
Yeah.
You know, we're through Thursday night. Friday night, we're through rounds 4 and 5 on Saturday afternoon. Everyone's just mentally finished,
yeah.
And they had like a 5-minute conversation about the monkeys. It was great. It was fantastic.
It goes to show you that there's not much left to talk about on day three of the draft, other than, you know, it goes by pretty quickly too. You know, I think people watch. I was watching, not watching. I was just, you know, looking at the picks as they go on my phone. Yeah, it can get a little bit crazy, but they all do a great job. And you know, listen, I got to tell you, I came into the building today, and, you know, the parking lot hasn't been full in a long time. The boys are back. They're back working out. They're practicing, and it's exciting to see a lot of the new faces around the building. I know the rookie minicamp is coming up, and I get a chance to start to look at some of the younger guys and what they can do. And, you know, how they're going to fit in the system. But, you know, bottom line is that all these guys have to learn, no matter who they are, first round, second round, all the way down to the sixth round draft pick this year. They're all in a learning stage, and it's going to be a little bit different when they get into the building to understand that this is a day job. This is your job now. It's no longer college. This is you come to work. And there's no better analogy than what Charles said, and that is these guys that want to win and be pros, they get into the building early. They do everything they can, and you know what?
If you're a quarterback, especially.
But I'll tell you, that goes down to every position, you know. So
especially the punters, man. You guys got to get
here. Hey, listen,
early.
I was one of the first guys in the building all the time, but the fact is that's why I played 22 seasons.
Absolutely.
And here's the real reason why, is because you take your job serious and you want to be the best you can at every one of those. I will tell you that these guys that, you know, the character issues are so big with not only the Giants, but with all teams, John. They want to get guys that are captains. You know, Ingram was a captain for his team.
Davis Webb, son of a coach. Tomlinson graduated in 3.5 years with a degree in finance. I mean, they drafted some good kids here.
I mean, all ACC academic team 4 years in a row for Bizzanovati. I mean, these are smart dudes, you know. So, and that comes into play when you start to build your board. You got obviously the physical skills, but where are the mental skills, the character skills, things like that, all comes into play when you're drafting Giants, especially.
And the cool thing, by the way, and first of all, I didn't know that Charles Davis went to high school in New Paltz, New York.
He has such Southern charm
like manner about him, and he went to school at Tennessee. That's where he was born.
That's probably
he moved there when he was 2 years old.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had no idea he was a New York guy. That's great. So we'll definitely have Charles on again down the road as we move forward here. 201-939-4513. One thing I want to mention before we get to the calls, and Charlie, you're up first. You're on the line first. We'll get to you to lead off the show today. But one thing I didn't realize until I talked to Davis Webb on Saturday, we had a call-in interview. You can see that on Giants.com, by the way. Him and Evan Ingram played on the same Senior Bowl team. And Davis Webb told him during the week to Ingram that he was his favorite player. Favorite guy to throw the ball to, favorite guy to be around. So they already have a little bit of a connection there.
And Davis Webb was the MVP of that Senior Bowl. If you go back and look at that, he had a really good game. So, yeah, listen, you know, the way it goes, those guys will be throwing many passes to each other in the future. You know, because they'll be around here for a while.
201-939-4513. Here we go.
Here we go.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the head.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Hi, Chuckles.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, John.
Hey.
Maybe we can get the orangutan to take Flowers' spot. How about that? I would love to see it. Hey, yeah. I got something for all you guys. And anybody in Giant Nation that's a little squirmy and you don't want to hear this, block your ears, because I'm looking at Eli's contract.
Okay.
And, all right, because I think something's going on here with Webb and everything. His contract was 4 years, $84 million. He's got total guarantees of $65 million. He has already gotten $54 million. All he has left for guaranteed money is $13 million this year. After this year, he has no guaranteed money. In 2018, he has a $5 million roster bonus. He has a $22 million cap hit, and his dead cap is $12,400,000. And the next year, his cap hit is only $6 million, and he has another $5 million roster bonus.
Charlie, please don't tell me you're going to tell me that they're going to cut Eli after this season.
Not after this season, but definitely after 2018. But I think they might. If this team takes a step back and we go 8-8 or 9-7, they're going to blame this on Eli. They're not going to blame it on our bad offensive line, our no tackles. They're going to blame it on him, just like when McAdoo said, well, Eli's just got to play better. He's got to move better. He's got to have people at his feet. He's just going to have to make better decisions. So what I see here is they got this guy Webb, and if this guy shows anything and we take a step back, I will guarantee Eli will be gone. He will be cut. They're not going to give him a $5 million bonus. They
Another
did the exact same
dinner.
Thing to Phil Simms in 1994. They didn't want to give him his $1 million roster bonus. So I'm just warning everybody. I'm the canary in the mine. This is what I see. If you look at his contract, I'm telling
like
you,
that.
Man. I'm telling you.
I like that.
This is smells. This smells
Charlie.
Bad.
Okay, let
it
me.
Has nothing to do
yeah,
with
go
this
ahead.
Year,
Charlie. Let me
nothing
counter two things.
Nothing to do with the season that's coming up, Charlie.
And
not this year, 2017.
No.
No.
And I want to go back. Next. I want to go back to your Phil Simms reference real quick, because remember, Simms didn't just have a roster bonus that year. He also had to have rotator cuff surgery. Okay, so if Simms was healthy, he probably would have been back for that following year. But he tore his rotator cuff in his final year with the Giants. So that was one of the reasons that he didn't. In my opinion, the main reason. He didn't come back to the team, and the real
yeah,
reason they
Phil,
let him go.
Phil said he was fine, and he was actually working out at the facility, so whatever. But I'm just warning everybody. I mean,
right.
There's a reason why they took a quarterback now and not a year or two later.
Charlie, there's no way.
He
let
no
me say this.
No guaranteed money after this year.
No, well, look.
Oh, he has roster bonuses.
Well,
at
remember,
$5 million.
He said you have roster bonuses. Then obviously his signing bonus is prorated over the years of the cap. So that isn't money guaranteed money getting paid out maybe that year. But salary cap wise, that is still a payment
still
you're going to have to make and pay the piper eventually. But here's my major point. I know your caveat was. If the team takes a step back, and you know what, if they go 5-11 in 2018 and it's a disaster, then you know what, maybe what you're saying is possible. Who knows? And Davis Webb shows a lot. I'm not going to tell you it's impossible, but I think this team's too talented to be a 5-11 team a year from now, barring serious injury. And if they're winning 10 or 11 games and are a playoff team, I would find it really hard to believe that in a team that's built for now, that at that point will have a lot of guys under pretty large contracts getting towards the end of those deals on defense, like Olivier Vernon, Janoris Jenkins, Snacks Harrison, guys like that, that they're going to go with a quarterback with no regular season game experience, which Webb will not have barring a Manning injury, and say, we think we have a better chance of making a playoff run with these other really good players with Davis Webb than we do Eli Manning. I just don't see the logic. I don't see it happening.
Well, you know, I look at it like I'm looking at it. If you know, the only thing that can blow this up is if Eli and the Giants win a Super Bowl this year. Then they're not going to be able to do it. But you got to remember, you got Odell Beckham coming up. You got Pugh. You got Richburg. You got other Landale Collins' contract, and Eli's got a $22 million cap hit. So you tell me, after his guaranteed money is gone this year, and you go into next season when he's making cap hit of $22 million, and you got to sign all these guys, I'm just saying, if we took a step back, then they'll be blaming him, and they'll be looking at him going, I think this is their plan. I think it's their plan B or plan A. That's why they grabbed Webb. And if they do, it's disgusting. And the thing is with Phil Simms, you know, look what happened when they let Phil Simms go. We were in the desert for a long time until, you know, Collins came around. So I'm just saying, I'm just putting it out there. I'm just basically, like I said, I'm the canary in the mine. And I just hope it isn't true. And if anything happens with this memorabilia crap, that would be another thing that they would be able to pull out of their pocket and say, see. So all I'm saying is it wouldn't surprise me. This organization has done it in the past, and I can see them doing it again. I hope I'm totally wrong, and I hope Eli and the Giants go to the Super Bowl this year. But you got to remember, they haven't put any veterans around him on this offensive line.
You couldn't do it, could you, Charlie? You could not go through the whole conversation.
That's right.
I was just about to congratulate
now,
you. I swear
you
to you, I was like,
doing.
If he does not say one thing about the offensive line, I'm going to congratulate him. But had to do it at the end. You had to do it. All right, we're giving you enough of your time today, I would imagine.
Yeah,
we got
all
other guys
right.
To go,
okay,
so.
Guys, look, I appreciate letting me chime in, and I'd like
welcome.
To hear some other people think about that and see what they have to say about it.
All right, Charlie.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Have a good weekend.
You too, man.
I have nothing to say about that situation.
Do you think it's asinine? Or
I think it's absolutely crazy. It's not.
And here's how I look at it. Can you imagine – and again, there's no way to know what this Giants team is going to do over the next 2 years.
Like
that's the thing. We're predicting what's going to happen in 2 years, and we don't even know what the seasons are going
to
be.
That's why like. I said it has nothing to do with this season here.
But how about this? I'm going to put you as a veteran player on this team. And you have a quarterback in Davis Webb who in practice throws the ball really well. He's got a good arm, throws a nice spiral. Has never won a game in the National Football League. And you'll be Eli Manning sitting there. If you're a veteran in that locker room that wants to win, and that's your major concern, what's your reaction if they say, you know, we're going to get rid of this guy that's won two Super Bowls, and we're going to go with a guy that's never done anything in a regular season game before?
I think you have to understand from a player's perspective that that's, you know, it's going to inevitably happen. It's going to happen.
But aren't you going to be annoyed about it if you're a player on the team and you're trying to win, they get rid of your quarterback that's a veteran?
There's nothing you can do about it. You can be annoyed about it. You can be angry about it. You can be whatever. I mean, you could support it. But eventually this situation is going to present itself. It's going to have to happen one day or not. Or Eli's going to say, I'm done. That would make it the most easiest transition.
Right.
But from a player's perspective, when you're in the locker room, you are just now – you got to give your faith in the next guy. Whether you like it or not, you got to support the next guy. And you're never going to go there and be on record and start talking about second-guessing the organization and what they're doing, because they're going to turn around and say, hey, buddy, why don't you just worry about what you're doing? Don't worry about us, okay? You just play your butt off and take care of your own business. We'll take care of the rest. So, you could talk about a lot of those different situations. You could talk about, like you said, Olivia Vernon, and when his contract comes up, what are they going to do with him, and da-da-da-da-da. It's just, I think it's more important to talk about the now and what this team is going to be doing this season. I think it's very exciting what this season has to come, and I think that the Giants really did a nice job in their draft getting some quality players at some good positions. With, you know, you scratch your head about Davis Webb, but the fact of the matter is he's on the roster now. He's going to be here. And we'll be talking about this situation for, you know, years to come here until it happens.
How do you think they'll use Gallman early on here? I mean, I think Gallman, have a hard time figuring out what his role is going to be, or is it just going to be the deal, well, they'll just give him a series, or they'll give him one possession a game and let him kind of do that?
Well, I think that, you know, you got other running backs in the mix that are here, veteran guys. And so just like any rookie that comes in, unless you're a number one draft pick, you're gonna get your time on special teams, okay? I mean, you look at Orleans Darkwood. That's how he made his name here.
So you don't think he'll have a big role on offense then in his first year?
Unless we see some production issues out of Perkins, then I really feel like you might see an insertion of him. I'm really excited to see him run, and we'll see it in practice, and we'll certainly see it in the preseason games. But you know, John, as we both do, that running back position, nobody plays 16 games. They're always getting hurt. And so now I think that there's probably there would be a chance that he gets in from an injury situation, things like that. But they'll find a way. I mean, they'll find a way to put him in. But my first inkling is that it'll be a special teams maneuver.
You think they'll still add a thumper goal line type back at some point before the season starts? You think they're set?
It just depends. I think that, you know, you talked about Blunt and what's he doing. He's got other teams looking at him and stuff. I think he would be a really good fit for the Giants.
Do you think Darkwood could be that short yardage guy? Or do you think that could be Gallman or maybe even Sean Drone? What do you think?
I think it's Sean Drone, if you ask me, as far as a bruiser. I mean, there's really no bruiser in that backfield right now.
That's why I asked the question.
Exactly. Right. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. If they were to go out and get a Blunt, that would be your guy. But I think if you had to ask me today who I think the bruiser is, I think it's Drones.
201-939-4513. Not Ruben Drones, mind you. That would be Sean Drones.
Sean Drones.
Let's go to Matt in East Islip. Matt, what's up, buddy?
Not much, guys. How are you?
Doing great. What's
Wonderful.
Up, Matt?
Not much. I thought it was Cinco de Mayo today, not Friday the 13th after that phone call.
every Friday the 13th when Charlie calls.
My God.
So.
That was brutal. I mean, I know sometimes Charlie, to be honest, I think he does have good points sometimes.
Sure he does.
And I respect him a lot, actually. I know a lot of people... You know, you have the intro video or song with him, but not bad. But Charlie, if you're listening, pal, let's not assume things right away.
I don't buy any of it.
Matt, unfortunately, sometimes Charlie does some things out in the woods, I think, before he comes on the show with us, and he's maybe not as focused on some days as he is on others.
No doubt. I don't know. Maybe he's doing some LSU voodoo stuff. I don't know what's going on with him. But anyway, I think a big point of that, like my call really, is going off of that as well. I think if you're looking at a guy I wanted to really talk about today, it was Avery Moss. And because, you know, you look at his production at Youngstown opposite Derek Rivers, and, you know, he was obviously the lesser of the two, you know, highlighted guys. And, you know, he was still pretty productive when he was at Nebraska, and then he got on that off-the-field problem. But you look at the past Giants teams and the championship teams, the pass rushers, you know, they've relied on guys like Dave Tollefson a ton and, you know, situational guys, even if it was DC or whoever it may have been. You know, of course, Tuck, Umanura, Strahan, you know, you guys know the drill. But, you know, they've kind of looked for that kind of guy in the past, whether it was, you know, Owa, who hasn't really produced as a third-round pick so far. He struggled with his health as well. And I think, you know, you look at a guy like Moss, he's a huge piece, I think, for this year that I think people are overlooking. Because when you have guys like JPP and Vernon playing 97% of your snaps, I mean, these guys aren't Iron Men. I mean, I understand Vernon stays after practice and runs sprints, and that's great, and he's in sick shape. But you have to have quality production from your backups as well, not just, all right, this guy's going to come in and get destroyed by a left tackle. I think he could rush from the inside, the outside, and that's what teams like the Seahawks a couple years ago were really good at. Hey, this guy was a fifth-round pick, but now he's our Super Bowl MVP. You know, it's stuff like that, that's what makes these good teams great teams and bring them to the next level, and that's what I think this draft did for the Giants. Maybe they weren't the flashiest picks, but they're quality, really good picks, I think, for the future.
You know, so, Matt, and the one thing that people mentioned to me about Moss is that they think he fits into what Spags likes to do, and I think you hit it. He could be a run-stopping end early in, you know, down in distance. He can be a pass rusher from the inside late down in distance. And you're right, Spags likes to move those guys around. So I think – I'm not sure he's going to come in and do it right away. He's a fifth-round pick.
No.
I know he was a you know, top-five power conference guy before he went to Youngstown.
Sure.
So it isn't a, you know, quote-unquote small-school guy. But I think you can see him by the second half of the season working into the rotation as a, you know, third-down situational pass rusher. And then if you want to give Vernon and JPP a blow, maybe you throw him out there with Terry Winn at end to try to stop the run a little bit early in downs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at last year, people were thinking, you know, before Robert Ayers signed with Tampa, they said maybe there's a chance with Cap, you know, we could get him back and then have him as the third guy and play on the inside. And that's a lot of people comp him to Robert Ayers.
Yeah.
And he's very similar in that sense. He's a powerful, quick twitch, long-armed athlete. And, you know, he could definitely, you know, dip and rip underneath tackles, and playing with that quickness on the inside, you know, that's a big help for this Giants team. So I agree with you. I'd say by, you know, week 7, 8, you know, he's working in the rotation. You know, I think, and he'll find his way on this team and produce. So I think he's a guy to look at going forward. But
thank you, Matt.
That's all my point for today. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Plus, you know, this defense, they do need the defense line. They need depth, okay? Okwara is another guy that last year just came out of nowhere, so don't forget about him. You know, to give those guys a little bit of a blow in there. But really, you know, that defensive line, it's not uncommon for them just to be, you know, shuffling in and out. I think that last year, the reason you saw those two DN guys in Vernon and JPP play so much because they really didn't have faith in the guys behind them. Really didn't. So,
especially running situations. You know, people talk about JPP and Vernon with the pass rush,
but they're both great against the run.
And that's the thing. And that's why when we had the conversation last year, when JPP hurt himself with his hernia, or what was sports hernia.
Yeah.
And he missed the rest of the year. That was right before the Cowboys games, right? Everybody's like, well, how are you going to get to Dak Prescott? I didn't care about that. I was worried about stopping Ezekiel Elliott on first and second down.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, you know, they went out and you look at what they've done in the draft. They, you know, they get Dalvin Tomlinson. I mean, not only you heard Charles, he can rush the passer too a little bit. So it's just going to be really interesting about this roster this year and who makes, you know, the 53-man roster. It's going to be a little bit of a different pick this year, in my opinion. I think that and, you know, you talked about the NFC East, John. I mean, the NFC East has gotten relatively healthy from a perspective. It's like you look at all four teams now.
It's going to be a good division.
And it's going to be a really good division this year.
All four teams have quarterbacks now.
Yeah, yeah.
And they all have good players for the quarterbacks to throw it to. It'll be interesting. Let's go to Pat in Brooklyn, the best borough of them all. What's up, Pat?
Hello.
Pat. Go ahead.
Hello.
We hear you, Pat. Go ahead.
I think the Giants really made a good draft selection with taking Evan Engram. I think it will really upgrade their offense and make them the best receiving core in the NFL.
You know, it's funny, Pat. We actually had this question on a written article on Giants.com the other day. So, Jeff, I'll pose it to you. Do the Giants now have the best receiver and tight end combination in the NFC? I'll even say NFL. Why not? Pat, thanks for the call, man. We appreciate it. You can listen to our answer on Giants.com. So make sure you go to the website. You can listen to us there.
Okay.
Well, I mean, listen, I look at Dallas with – I still think Jason Witten can play.
Correct.
And I think that, you know –
But who has the three receivers plus the tight end?
I don't,
Beckham, Marshall, Shepard, plus Ingram, a fourth guy that can catch. I can get to three for other teams. I can't get to four.
I think you have a hard time getting to four. I don't think there is anybody. I really don't.
Yeah, Dallas is close, but, you know, after you get by Beasley, Bryan, and Witten, what, Terrence Williams, you know, he doesn't do it for me.
No.
The Redskins lost a lot of their receivers last year, so you have Crowder, Terrell Pryor, Jordan Reed, but then who's the fourth guy?
Yeah,
the Bucs are close. You got DeSean Jackson.
Well, see, there was my
Mike Evans, O.J. Howard, but again, who's the fourth guy?
Yeah. I don't think you can really say that there's a team that has the four people.
Saints were close, but then they got rid of Brandon Cooks, so that took them out of the mix.
What about the Patriots? Edelman?
Cooks, Edelman, Gronk.
Hogan.
And Hogan, or if you want to throw Malcolm Mitchell in there, however you want to talk
They're
about
close. I would
They're
say
close, but they don't have the top-end guy like Beckham, though. Like, no one's in Beckham's class from that group.
Yeah,
but that's close. That's not bad.
But other than that, I mean, you know, without going through them on paper, but it's,
yeah, I mean, they really the trust
there's
me.
Not a lot to go from three to four. I mean, we can clump a handful of teams in three receivers and or two receivers in a tight end, right?
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. And again, when a lot of the people have said when they drafted Ingram that it was going to be a match nightmare, which mm-hmm. that's what it is. I think you're going to see a lot of motion out of Ingram. They're going to put him. They'll start him on the line of scrimmage. He'll back off in that motion set, motion one way. Try to get some mismatches, not only for him but for Odell. Get some miscommunication in the defenses, and then Eli has got to pick it up, make the plays. Going to be interesting.
I want to go through one other question with you from our Factor Fiction at the end of the show, but I want to squeeze these two calls in. Is that okay? All right, let's go to Dean Atlanta. D, you're up next on Giants.com. How are you, buddy?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well, D. What's up?
A couple of things about the draft and our running back situation. I'm going to start with the running back situation.
Yes, sir.
I feel like Darkwood he's like the dark horse to me. I don't know what it is, but I see something in him. I don't even want to get drones. I want to just give him the opportunity to produce. He runs so hard. Yeah, I'm assuming I saw that like at the end of the season, like he just disappeared.
That's your answer. Other than that, I agree with you. I think the guy can run hard. I think he's a player, but he just gets hurt.
And D, I agree. I think Darkwa is the dark horse short yardage back because he can square his shoulders and push the pile a little bit.
Yeah,
he's a guy. I personally don't want to use the roster spot for another running back. I'd rather just go with the three if possible, and we could keep somebody kind of like in a practice squad situation. I know a lot of the guys, they don't have the eligibility. They have too much time in to even be on a practice squad.
Right.
But we need to add that depth to the secondary and on defense or even on the line. I don't want to spend any extra money on a running back. I just don't want to allocate that to a running back unless it's just necessary. I feel like the three we should go with are Perkins, Darkwa, and I guess Vereen, but I'm kind of over Vereen, honestly. Like, he disappointed me so bad last year with the injuries. He just hasn't been the same back for whatever reason. But I don't know. That's just me. But like I said, I feel like also personally – I didn't even like the fact that they gave Perkins the starting job. I felt like we should have waited until camp and had them sorted out in camp. That's just my opinion.
Well, that's what's going to happen
this
year.
Good points. Appreciate the call, bud.
Yeah, D. You know, just to switch up, were you a little surprised that the Giants didn't get a cornerback in this draft?
No.
No?
I thought it was very possible just because it was such a deep position in the draft. So
that's what I was kind of
I probably
to.
Thought there was a 50-50 shot. So yeah. It wouldn't have surprised me if they did. It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't.
Yeah.
Because they do have a lot of good corners on the roster. They drafted one in the first round last year.
Yeah, so they do. Yeah, exactly. I was just curious because there was a lot of cornerbacks in the draft. So, and evidently not one of them fell where they needed to be on their board or what have you.
Right.
So,
I want to go back to a question, and this he kind of D I thought had a really good call, and he kind of popped something in my head a little bit. Gonna get your take on it. To me, this is almost like a transition year. You know, Vereen is on the roster, and I think they'll use him in third down situations. But I wonder, and Dottino, I thought, made a really good comparison a couple days ago, how he's comparing what this Giants offense could look like compared to the 2011 Packers with the move tight end in Finley versus Ingram. Red Ellison can kind of be like the Crabtree type guy. Then you have a bunch of good receivers. You know, they had Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Donald Driver. Compares to Marshall, Beckham, Shepard. It makes a lot of sense. And what the Packers did that year is they really split their carries between Starks. Oh, boy, now the second guy they split their carries with is escaping me. But they really did split the carries between a couple of guys.
It was the guy that was here.
It wasn't – oh, Grant. Thank you. It was Grant. Yeah. Exactly. So I wonder if the reason they drafted Gallman is because he is like Paul Perkins, and both guys have the skill set to do everything, and that will eventually be the Giants' two-headed running back combination. And they'll just kind of each get 12 to 15 carries, and they'll work it out that way. I wonder if that's what the goal is.
Interesting. Well, it doesn't surprise me that the Giants and Ben McAdoo is trying to build something that he has come from. You know, I mean, you think that building the Packers' offense, the way how high octane it runs now.
And it was pretty good in 2011, by the way. That was Aaron Rodgers' 50 touchdowns.
John, listen, how many times have we sat in the room and talked about the Packers? What is this team missing that the Packers have? It's been a big play tight end. Yeah. I mean, come on. And I'm talking about a Bennett type of tight end. I'm talking about like a Jimmy Graham tight end.
That's what Ingram is supposed to be.
Exactly. That's where Eli has got to be. He sleeps good at night now. Oh, I got a guy that can put him anywhere and can make some plays, especially in the middle of the field.
And apparently, and Charles Davis said he ran the whole route tree in college, so he should be a guy that should be able to step in. And again, rookie's a rookie. We're not saying he's going to do it right away, but it's a guy that can step in and be good pretty quick. Marquise in California. Marquise, you're the final caller. What's up, buddy?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you guys doing?
Good.
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I just want to get out the way. Jeff Spiegels, man. I can't believe I'm speaking to you right now from California, man. I looked at you as a young kid playing all these times, man. I just really want to get that out the way, how much of a thrill it is to speak.
Appreciate it,
with
my man.
I watch, okay? Now,
he looks so happy now.
That's a good call.
You made
There's
Figo so happy,
say.
Marquise.
Nothing more to miss. No, just kidding. <yeah. laughs> What do you got for it? I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
No problem. I just want to say this real quick, and I'm going to get off the air. About the O-line, okay? We get DJ Fluker. We get Adam Biznawadi. That was actually a guy that I really wanted us to get. And it was pretty funny because I went to get something to eat, and I came back in the sixth round, and we got him. I said, what the heck? Oh, snap.
Yeah, they
he
traded up.
I really wanted.
They traded up.
Yeah, so about DJ Fluker, I wanted to ask you guys, where do you guys think he will fit on the O-line? And kind of give me how you guys want the O-line to look. Like Jeff, I want to know five offensive linemen you would like to start this season, or how it will look this season. Of course, we can't say Biznawadi or something like that. He's a rookie or
right,
all like
right,
that. But
right.
I would like to know five offensive linemen from each of you fellas.
All right, I'll give you mine. I'll give you mine right now.
Thank you, Marquise. Appreciate
going
it.
Going left to right: Flowers, Pugh, Richburg, Jerry, and it's going to be Fluker on the right side. That's my guys. Right there, and I'll tell you, Bobby Hart, he can play the swing, he can go whatever, and I think that Biznawadi would be another guy. You got and it's a little bit more depth. Remember, like Charles said, you only have seven that will play. You got seven that dress, five play.
You're gonna be on the roster though.
Yeah, but one of them is always
But doesn't Brett Jones have to be on the seven to be your backup center?
No, I'm talking about game day.
I know. Doesn't Brett Jones have to be your backup center?
Yeah.
Who else is gonna play center?
No, I'm saying he could. Yeah, he's going to have to be. Yeah, have a center in there. And
I imagine Biznawadi wouldn't get a shirt.
Biznawadi wouldn't get a shirt
or,
unless there's an injury somewhere.
Remember, you have those undrafted free agents that they're bringing in that they're pretty high on too. So, my five guys across, I'm with you. I think Flowers left tackle is easy. Pugh at left guard is easy. Richburg at center is easy. I know some people would argue no John Jerry at right guard. I'd be very surprised if he's not the starting right guard.
Me too.
You know, he's not the perfect player, but
he's a consistent player.
He does what he does exactly. Yeah. And then I haven't seen Fluker do anything yet.
All I know, he's a big dude.
He's a monster. So I hesitate handing him the job. When I've seen Bobby Hart, he's going
to
get –
We didn't hand it to him. They went through camp, and they competed.
I don't put it this way. And I know people have said, oh, Fluker, he played guard. He's more of a guard. I think – and even Jerry Reese has said see him as more of a guard. But based on the analytics of Pro Football Focus, he played better at tackle than he did at guard because of his size. At guard, you have to pull a lot, and I don't – you don't want to put DJ Fluker on the move too much. He's not exactly, captain agility out there. So, to me, I think his best chance at getting a starting job is to beat out Bobby Hart.
You just don't think he's going to do it.
I don't know. I haven't seen him on the field yet. You're asking me to make a call with no education.
I didn't ask you. The caller asked
Marquise,
you.
You're asking me to make a call with no education. But if I had to place a bet, I'll go with the devil I know. I'll go with Bobby Hart out there.
All right.
But I think that's where Fluker is the best chance to chip in. Now, real quick, before we say goodbye, I want to eat. Cole wants to eat. Real quick. Dan Salmon had a great fact or fiction question this week. Who will be the most improved team on the Giants' schedule this year? You can think about it for a second. I'm going to give you my –
This year's or last
year? No, that's last year's. I'm going to bring up this year's for you right here, okay? There's your schedule, okay? I looked at this, and I took all the NFC East teams out of the mix. I think the Eagles will have a chance if Carson Wentz makes a big jump in year number two. I think there's a chance that the Eagles, they added some pieces, Alshon Jeffrey, Derek Barnett in the draft. I think they can be pretty good.
What basically defines most improved? Better record? What? Just
take your pick. The two teams that I came down to, and I'll give you my explanation for it. I think the two teams that are quietly dangerous are actually in back-to-back weeks for the Giants. The Bucks. And the Chargers. And let me explain. It's for different reasons. I think for the Bucks, you have Jameis Winston in year three. All right? Another year with Mike Evans. He's in year four. Good combination. You add DeSean Jackson. Okay?
Howard.
You add O.J. Howard. A young defense gets a year older. They were in the playoff mix already last year. Yeah. I think there's a good chance they're a playoff team. Now, my real sleeper team here are the Chargers. And let me run down for you why. Did you know the Chargers had more giveaways than any NFL team last year?
Okay.
35. You figure that'll normalize a little bit, right? They went 5-11. You know what their plus minus was in terms of points? At 5-11, they were only minus 13. They lost more close games last year
than
any
team
you'll
imagine.
And Bosa missed the first four games. Yep. They're getting Keenan Allen back from injury. They added two offensive linemen in the draft that I think can start in week one in Forrest Lamp and Dan Feeney at both guard spots. They signed Russell Okung.
Yep.
In the offseason. Yep. So they could have three different starting offensive linemen.
They would probably be my most improved over the Buccaneers.
And then under the radar, they were only 16th in yards allowed on defense last year. They were 29th in points because of all those turnovers on offense setting up the opposing team. So I think their defense is better than people give them credit for. They still have Phillip Rivers, who's not the player he used to, but he can still play.
Sure.
I think the Chargers can be a sleeper playoff team this year if their new head coach, Anthony Lynn, does a good job getting everything together. I think that's my
sleeper getting everything
team
together.
This
they're
year.
Moving. They've moved into a new place, and that takes a toll on a little bit too.
All those things, absolutely. Yeah. And they have a lot of things working against them. But I think the Chargers had the talent to be a real dangerous team this year. And I think look at those first few games, like at Dallas, at Eagles, at Broncos, Seahawks, and they kind of overlook Bucks and Chargers. I'm telling you, tough.
Yeah.
Tough couple of games.
I mean, I look at the Broncos, they didn't have a great season last year. I think they're going to be improved.
Oh, it depends if Simeon gets a lot better, too, or Paxton Lynch if he ends up being the starter.
Yeah, but I think that, but my guys are Chargers, Buccaneers, and Rams. You know, the 49ers, they're not going to be any good.
Do you think Goff's going to be better this year?
Well, he has to be.
Well, he can't be worse. But how much better do you think he's going to be?
I mean, listen, let's give the guy a chance, Right. Let him, really, but... I think the Cardinals could get a little bit more improved than they were last year. I mean, they had a lot of injuries, and they were certainly –
it's a tough schedule.
Yeah, it really is, especially if some of those teams really start picking it up.
I mean, the only team that you really look at and you're like, boy, they don't have anything that really scares me is the 49ers.
Yeah.
The Rams have that defensive line still.
The Rams always can play tough. They really do. They win some
games
you don't think.
Dude, they almost beat the Giants in London last year. Case Keenum didn't throw, five interceptions in that game? Did he throw five?
The Rams are not a team that just, they go 3-13 consecutively every year. They compete.
They were inside the Giants' 30-yard line with a chance to tie that game last year.
They compete. They compete.
Feast. So. Good times.
Good stuff, as always. Happy
and thanks
Friday.
For joining
Cinco de Mayo,
callers.
By the way.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. I didn't say I was on the air yesterday, so happy Star Wars Day. Hope you everybody enjoyed May 4th yesterday. That's always a good time.
What day was it?
May the 4th.
No, but is it
Star Wars Day?
Star Wars Day. That's May 4th?
Think of it. May the 4th.
May the 4th, whatever.
May the 4th be with you. There you go.
And may the 5th be with you tomorrow.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday, and try to survive the rain. Get your canoes ready. We'll see you next time, everybody. Take it easy.